So I'm gonna play the club and then the music.
All right. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Hello Chaos, the podcast of exploring the messy and chaotic minds of founders and entrepreneurs across the country. And today we have on our podcast guest is Roland from Arrow AI. He is the CEO and co-founder of, and Roland, pronounce your last name to make sure I don't mispronounce it. It's Reichel?
Correct, Reichel.
Yeah. All right, Roland Reichel.
Good start.
Welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here. Hello, Chaos.
That's right. So Roland, you know, it's like I told you, you know, our tagline is where aha meets oh shit. And as we like to explore, what were those, you know, some aha moments? What are those oh shit moments? Sometimes it's the oh shit that creates the ahas. But before we get started in all of that, let's just kind of give me the 30,000 foot of Roland's journey into entrepreneurship and into becoming a founder.
Yeah, sure. I'm really pleased with the first 30 seconds here because I was not the first person to swear on the podcast. usually I come out with like, you know, a string of expletives kind of out of the gate. So I feel like I've been granted permission already.
That's right. You have.
Thank you for doing that, Jennifer. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. I've been an entrepreneur in one way or another my entire life. When I was 16, I used to skateboard from my house to the local high school where I was. And on the way, I would stop at a donut shop and get a dozen donuts. I'd pay $6. And when I got to the school in the morning, I'd sell those donuts for $1 a piece and make $6 a day. So, and I'd use that $6 to buy lunch. So that was my first real, introduction to entrepreneurship. But I actually started off in a completely different industry. I went to graduate school for public policy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I spent some time working with the government and working with cities and you know, disadvantaged constituents within those cities. So I really came out of that. But again, my family was an entrepreneur, owned some local retail shops when I was a kid. And so I really had that in my blood. And after 4 or 5 years of working in city government, I decided, you know, it's time for me to go on my path. So I've been on this entrepreneurial path for about 15 or 20 years now. And most of that focused on digital advertising,
okay,
and building technology or selling technology and that impacts people's ability to market in the digital space.
So did you come prior to Arrow and starting Arrow, were you in, you said digital advertising, media, were you working at on the agency side or were you working for another product?
Product and technology.
Okay.
Yeah, product and technology. So I worked for a company called Alphabird based in San Francisco many years ago, where we were selling products to big companies like Disney, Microsoft, Discovery Channel, Ryan Seacrest, Ford Motor Company. And then after that, I went and worked for a company based in Hong Kong for about 2.5 years. So I ran the US for them, building their business and technology partnerships. And that was really where I got deep into the technology side of digital advertising. That was at a point where digital advertising was going from being more of a manual driven process where, you know, you might email the New York Times. I made a sign to call, but email the New York Times. Yeah, there's no sign for email. You'd email.
That's right. Well, that's what I was like. I come from the media side. You know, I grew up in the agency world, media buying. So just, I don't know if we've talked about this, Roland, but, you know, I was one of the first digital media buyers in the U.S. in 1998. I'm going to date myself. There were only like maybe 50 of us and we all kind of convened at a conference called, wait for it, Internet World out of Chicago.
Fantastic.
But learning how, you know, we sat on committees of like, how do we create consistencies around advertising banners? And that's when the IAB was formed few years after that. Amazing. So, but yeah, it was very manual of, you know, very much like in the traditional world of you're soliciting your reps to go give me your inventory. And now it's moved, you know, then it moved into programmatic and real-time buying. And so that's where the space you kind of played in is in that supply side kind of digital technology. Is that?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And so as you just described, I think the ecosystem really well and the evolution of the ecosystem really, really well. So programmatic is when things became much more automated and data driven. And I think there was an assumption that media was going to be bought and sold in real time. And it was for a long time. And I think it still is. I wonder if they're shifting back to a bit more of a one-to-one relationship.
Yeah.
But, you know, the scale of digital advertising ecosystem is so big. It's $250 billion, right?
Yeah.
So programmatic makes sense. You need automated ways to allow people to spend those budgets at scale. And the audiences are so big. There's so many eyeballs out there. So I think there's always going to be some data-driven automated media buying in the world, right?
Right. So you went from that and Arrow, and we can touch on Arrow, get that conversation started. That's in the social space. So, you know, so when you said, what was that, that first kind of ideation of starting Arrow? Like, tell me that story.
Yeah. So a big part of my career was about media efficiency, right? We were building these big data platforms, wonky, 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 blah, 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 right? Like things that could handle billions of dollars, millions of dollars in budget and billions of impressions, et cetera. But it was all about media efficiency. And that's really great. And you're working for, you know, a company, a big company, it's got hundreds of millions of dollars and you can save them 3 or 4%. It's real money and everyone makes a great paycheck at home, but it's not exactly like chicken soup for the soul, right? So, you know, after that experience, I really started to think about, you know, how important digital advertising is to every single business. And then the next jump was not only how important is digital advertising, but how important is your digital profile, right? Your social profile, your social status. I mean, people talk about social proof in advertising nowadays.
Right.
And that's now, I think, gotten to a point. So that was the big aha moment for me was like, look, to win in business or be successful at any level of business, whether you own local retail, you're a real estate agent, all the way up to, you know, a business doing $300 million a year, you have to have a really strong social profile.
Right.
And I think millions of businesses suffer with that. And that realization was the beginning of Arrow.
Okay. And so what, so tell people, tell our listeners, what does Arrow do? It's an AI technology, but what does Arrow do?
So we're all being crushed under this requirement to create content every day. And you've got to be posting and boosting content across 6 or 7 different channels. And if you let it take over, it can be 2 or 3 hours of your day just to keep your business profiles like up to date. So Arrow automates that whole thing and takes it off your plate.
Okay.
It plugs directly into your social media profiles. It uses automation, artificial intelligence, a little smattering of human intelligence in there as well. And it manages those business profiles as if it was you. So it's posting for you, it's boosting content for you, and it's making sure your social profiles are super awesome, looking really wonderful every day, freeing up those couple hours so you can go off and actually work on your business or, you know, I mean, hey, maybe you can spend a couple hours with your kids at the end of the day.
That's right. And we're using Arrow AI with Orange Whip. So it is a real helper. So that it keeps our team focused on some of that more created content versus kind of the curated content that you guys, that the technology helps us provide, or making sure that our content is on the website so that Arrow can find it and then curate it out to the social. So we've enjoyed watching our lift for that.
Perfect.
So Arrow's been around for what, 3 years? Is that right? Or longer?
No, just under 3 years, about 2.5. We've had our products in market for a couple of years now. So we're in that, are we a startup? Are we a business, high growth company, kind of funny and interesting moment.
So you're in that crossroads. So how do you define yourself? So let's take a step back. So you're co-founder. So when you said, okay, I've got this idea, I've got this, you know, the technology, were you more of the idea person and you hired a team to produce your technology, or was that your other, was that your co-founder? Was how did you formulate your team?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think the core of that question really is like, are you a technical co-founder, a technical founder or non-technical founder, right? And that's really important. You know, I believe you can build technology products and not be a technical founder. There's tremendous benefits if you are a technical founder because you can build the product yourself.
Right.
But in our instance, there's two founders, majority founders. I'm much more technical than my co-founder. My main role in the early stages was really around the core idea. So strategy and product.
Okay.
Who is this market? What do they need? What's the product going to be? And how's it going to meet the needs of that user? And that was about a year of my life, quite frankly, just answering those questions.
And were you doing that working for somebody else and kind of doing that as kind of your bootstrap kind of side gig? Or did you say, you know what, I need to go all in and just focus on this?
All in and focus. You know, our goal is to build something that's got corporate value of upwards of $250 million or beyond. And that was our goal from the beginning. And to do that, you really have to go all in. And I was kind of fortunate. I was in a situation I could do that for a while at least. And so we raised some money and you know, built a small team, but effective team from product and technology and strategy and got started. What's I think super interesting, especially around SaaS and product-led companies, is there's a huge ecosystem of micro or mid, you know, micro SaaS, really. People are building products and scaling up and with teams of even one or two or three people and exiting those companies kind of sub $2.5 million or even $1 million at a shot, you know, in like 12 to 14 months. So that's a really interesting ecosystem. But our goal was to build something again with like pretty big corporate value.
And so how many people are on your team today? Cause you've got don't you have quite a few?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm a big fan of very few direct reports as the CEO. So I have two people that I manage directly, but we're like 18 people all in right now.
Okay. And then you're being the non-technical founder.
Yeah.
Who are the other founders? Are they the technical ones that then manage the technical people? How is it structured?
Right. So there's two majority founders and a minority founder. So three of us started it. And none of us are technical founders.
Okay.
When I say technical founder, I mean, there's a CTO.
Right. They're like, they're doing the code.
They write the code. Exactly. Right. And for the first year, they probably write all the code.
Right.
Or at least for the MVP.
Right.
So none of us were technical founders. But out of the group, I'm the most technical in that I built an AI powered video advertising platform in a company before this.
Oh, wow.
This is actually my second technology build specifically around artificial intelligence and advertising. And we should definitely chat about AI at some point in the.
Yes. Yeah.
It'd be super cool. But so my technical knowledge and skill is pretty high, though I don't code. So I've been playing the role of product from the beginning.
Okay.
Who's the user? What's this product do? And how does the product meet the needs of that user? And then driving that forward. And we hired a technical team and driving it forward with that team.
What was, so I'm curious of, there's three co-founders then. How did you guys decide? Did you guys bring a lawyer in to kind of work out your operating agreement? Like, what was that? Was that just, hey, we all get along? It was an easy way to kind of map out who's doing what. Was there any issues there around that company formation?
You want the G version or like the X-rated version of that?
I want the real version. I want the genuine, no BS.
You know, I think what's really interesting about situations like that is everyone kind of remembers how things went down a little bit differently, right?
So, yeah, that's right.
You know, my the only version I can give you is my own version. Yeah, I It was pretty smooth. You know, I think honestly, a lot of those early equity discussions happen really fast and really quickly, and they're really clear. And they tend to be round numbers, right?
Right.
It's not like, oh, hey, you're going to get 13.3469% and I'm going to get 17.42% or whatever. Like it just happens quickly. It's like, okay, right. Boom, you're 50, you're 40, you're 10, and then you're kind of done. And sometimes even just writes on the back of a napkin and then you go draft the paper.
Right.
Later, right. So, there wasn't a lot of jostling early on. I think where things get intense is later as the company develops.
Now you got your kind of your runway, but then it becomes, okay, we hit first milestone, boom, where do we go?
Yeah, right? It becomes boom, where we go. And no matter what, there's no way everyone's contribution is going to be equal at all times, right? And so there's going to be times you're like, what the heck? Like, you're not doing anything. And like, what the heck? You're not doing anything. And so, you know, you have to really, I think, negotiate those moments. What's the headline? The headline is, you know, pick your marriage, like pick your business partners in a startup even more carefully than you pick your marriage.
That's right. Because we've heard lots of stories of, you know, those relationships kind of, they end. Sometimes not all that great because of those conversations or, you know, relationships weren't, or the decisions weren't mapped out early in. So you're 3 years in, right?
Yeah.
2.5. You've got a team of like about 18, 20 people.
Yeah. What's
the next, like, next milestone? I mean, where are you guys projecting from here?
Yeah. So we're in a moment where, you know, we've really locked in our product offering. I should say product market fit, but even more important than that, I think a lot of people talk about product market fit, Jennifer, but what's even more important is what I call product market offer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because product market fit says like, cool, you got something people want to buy, right? Selling donuts to teenagers at 8 a.m. That's no problem. But the offer is really critical. What is the price point of your product? How do you sell it? And because when you get the offer right, it means you've got your go-to-market strategy right. And that is kind of everything. I mean, I can't tell you how many amazing products I've seen and even been involved with that, you know, are brilliant, amazing products, but no one buys them. And
right.
The converse of that is, you know, we've all seen products in the market that are kind of shitty and not that great, but they're selling like crazy. They got a billboard on the Bay Bridge. I mean, I think a good example of that, and I'm not picking on this company at all, but Brex is a great example of that. I mean, really think about, I have a Brex card.
Right.
So like, here I am talking about something that I completely bought into myself. And this is not an ad for Brex. I love those. But what I am saying is that, what is it really? It's a friggin' charge card with a nice website.
Yeah.
But everyone uses it. So they really got the product market offer fit, right? And scaled pieces out of it. So that's, I think, an example that a lot of like my cohort and colleagues kind of talk about is they did a great job.
Yeah. So, yeah. And so interesting. You talk about that. That's where, you know, Orange Whip and Hella Chaos, that's where we are right now. We're trying to figure out the product offering. You know, we know we've got a great product, but like, how do we get that good market fit? So I know it's a struggle and it's not that easy. So, now that you've done that, you feel like you've nailed that. You guys have the pricing strategy and your offer fit. Is it now just like, okay, now we can explode? Or?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's the idea. You still have to figure out your, you know, how to grow and what's going to cost to grow, right? So once you kind of figure out your LTV and your CAC of your product, and I really sympathize, you know, Jennifer, with what you're talking about. Like, as a owner of a business or startup, either direction, there really is nothing more stressful or more scary than not having a business model.
Yeah.
Because you literally are like, I have no friggin' idea how to make money.
Right. Like,
it sucks, man. I mean, it sucks so bad. Talk about sleepless nights or waking up in the morning, you know, stressed out before you even open your eyes. Because it's simply that. You're just like, I don't know how we're going to make money. And so when you get around that corner and can, you know, figure out, okay, we actually have a business model now. It's great. Correct. Cause now you're like, okay, cool. And like, now I can get to work on like, how the heck do we scale this thing?
That's right. That's right. So let's shift a little bit into AI technology. So you know, sure. you were in, you know, media and programmatic, and you said that you built a video technology like a product that was AI.
Yeah. It was a really cool product. So we started off as an ad network. It was a the first company I found was called Big Pond Media. And you know, basically what Big Pond Media did was we bought and sold media, right? We had a bunch of publishing partners, websites. We had some advertising partners. We'd go get the campaigns. We'd go to New York. We would drink martinis. Our stools, we would get campaigns, we would come home and we would go to publishers and say, hey, we got this great advertising, and we would take a small percentage for brokering deals. That's basically what an ad network is, right?
That's right.
So that was cool and super fun business and great value for everyone, right? But what happened was, is that whole ecosystem started to become much more data driven.
Yeah.
So we built a technology to basically do what we were doing before, which was a lot less fun. I mean, there was a heck of a lot less martinis and a heck of a lot less trips to New York. So that was kind of a bummer.
Yeah. And that was just, you know, it's the faceless behind the computer, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it's much more scalable business. So what we did is we were connected to like 1.5 million websites. We had demand partners integrated directly in, and we would place a piece of code on a website. So when a visitor hit that website, we'd try and figure out from the cookie data a little bit like who that visitor is, right? What kind of products, what was their search history? What kind of websites did they visit in the last 28 days, and try and figure out what's the right ad. And so then we would go out to our demand partners and find a video ad and deliver it to that person that hopefully matched their consumer interests.
Right.
So pretty straightforward, tailored advertising. But the thing that we did was really cool is we did that whole thing I just described in 240 milliseconds.
Wow.
So basically the blink of an eye. So that was our... that was our pitch. And the pitch I just gave you, that was what the pitch we gave to the bankers too, by the way.
And they went, done.
Yeah, they were like, 240 milliseconds? We love it.
That's right. So then you said, okay, I can do this on the social side.
Well, I think with the social, we were solving a slightly different problem, which is more around the content piece, right?
Okay.
Well, but the key is, it's just a really different, you know, audience. I mean, with Arrow, our whole focus is on non-technical folks, right? So folks who don't have tech, like the advertising industry, I don't know how to say this, it gets a little incestuous, a little wonky, a little inside baseball, right?
And it's a language all to itself. I always had to, whenever I made pitches to either our internal team at the agency or clients, I would always get stopped to go, you've just said a bunch of acronyms. I have no idea what you just said. So you got to go, okay, I got to take the media speak out. Because we do have our own language, you know.
Totally.
PRs,
blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And you know, it's really interesting you say that. I mean, we have banned all that language here at Arrow. We in our support team on Slack. And I'll see stuff on Slack and I'll jump in and be like, no, we, you know, don't do CPM. Like, no one knows what the heck you're talking about. So, I think that's the core of it, right? Like, you got this huge group of really smart, successful business owners out there, but they're not technical and they're not marketers for sure.
Right.
And they need marketing for sure.
Right.
And that was the idea. And so social just seemed like a good first arena for us, because it solves a real problem. But the bigger thing we want to do is just really service the needs of those millions of smart, successful, you know, business owners who, aren't technical and not marketers by trade.
Right. And so you're talking like it's small business, but also you serve like franchises and things that might maybe have marketing at the, I'm going to call it the shared services or at the corporate, but they've got 150 to sometimes 2,000 or 3,000 kind of affiliates that still operate as independent and don't have the know-how to do content and social.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think in that instance, you know, the value we provide the end user, we just shift that value to the corporate marketing team and let them provide that value to the small business, because they're right. trying to bridge that gap too. And, you know, if you're like a franchisee and you're working with your franchisors, or if you're a real estate agency working with real estate agents, retention of recruitment and retention becomes a big issue, right? How do I get the best agents and how do I keep those agents working for my real estate firm? And so offering a tool like Arrow, which can do marketing for them in a really mm-hmm. slick, automated way, is a great recruitment and retention tool, because now you as the you know, real estate agency is getting the best agents, because you're saying to them, look, come work for us. We're going to manage your social media marketing. We're going to make you look like a rock star out there. Right. Who doesn't want that? And so it's an interesting thing right now, especially as, you know, the whole labor market has just become way more giggy, fluid.
Yep. Except- hard to retain, you know, it's hard to retain people. They're yeah.
So hard,
especially in this space. That you're in and we're in, and but I've talked to a ton of founders, even in like the trade labor, it is hard to find and then find the right people and then to retain those right people because of this enticement of the gig, the, you know, you don't have to really stay at a place very long. You don't, you know, I don't think that value is instilled in a lot of people of
completely
younger generations. But yeah, so talk to me about AI. Like you've entered in a category, a space that is like, I think we're just seeing the start of this massive behemoth of, I mean, just from our agency and you know, our team, we've investigated, I don't know, 100, maybe like different tools and technology. And it just seems like a new one is out every day. And it's kind of overwhelming a little bit of I see benefits, but then I also look at it and go, ugh, there's so much. It's so much. How do you figure out, how do you incorporate those in your tech stack? Right. So do you, you know, so you're kind of unique, or do you have competitors, and then or do people kind of lump you into this? It's just AI. You're just another AI tool.
Yeah, it's a lot of interesting points there, Jennifer, and tons to unpack. And I agree with everything you're saying. No, and I just simply agree with everything you're saying. It is a bit overwhelming. You know, the words being thrown around a lot. Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100%. Like, the real question is, how does it impact me? How does it impact my business? How can I leverage this technology to, you know, improve business outcomes or make my business better, make more money, et cetera? There's kind of a lot of different types of AI out there, right?
Right.
And there are a lot of products. I think the differentiator for us is really simple, which is that we are a technology company, yes, at our core, but we think about ourselves more as like a service company.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is that, like, AI just doesn't mean shit if you can't use it, right?
That's right.
Like a badass, amazing friggin' shovel, but if you can't get it out of the garage or whatever, or you can't use it, difference that makes. So our goal as a company isn't to build the best AI in the world. That's not what we set out to do. We weren't like, oh, we're going to build AI that's the most amazing AI ever. It was we want to build something that people can actually use.
Right.
So the packaging around it, the product, the service that you give to people, making it so they can actually implement this friggin' thing in their daily lives is the game from my perspective. And so if I was, you know, thinking about, hey, what AI tools am I going to use? I might just say, like, what tools am I going to use? Like, our advantage at Arrow, it's a done for you service. Like, that's our value proposition. Like, use Arrow because you don't have to do anything. You don't have to lift a finger. Once you integrate it, you send an email and say, hey, I want more of this. I want more of that. But you don't have to push the buttons. You don't have to pull the levers. And for a lot of people, that's a really, you know,
right.
So that's, I think, the main thing is just find tools that like actually work for you, because we're getting to a point now where AI is going to start being embedded in kind of everything.
Yep. I mean, I look at it as, and that's kind of how I approached it with our own kind of operations. Same thing with like CRM and email. It gets overwhelming. And a lot of people overbuy their CRM and they use it as trigger-based emails. I mean, or because you're right, it's like, it's the next thing of I need to have Salesforce, but then they get Salesforce and they spend a shit ton of money on it and they're using it like MailChimp.
Buddy. Sorry. I was just saying, don't get Salesforce, anyone. Don't do it.
I was like, no. I'm the same. Like, it is so, especially for small, like startups and small business. I mean, unless you're a huge corporation that has an IT department and champions that you, again, can afford $1 million of labor just to focus on the implementation of Salesforce, it is not worth it. Because that's what we find when we work, you know, on our marketing team side with our clients there. They are, you know, we kind of go in and go, how are you using Salesforce? And they're using it, you know, like MailChimp that costs, that they could be paying $100 a month versus $20,000 a month. So, but, you know, I look at AI the same way of we're kind of looking at what's in that, you know, what's in that those tools that make sense for us as our operations to make us more efficient or you know, whatever, save time and money and energy, right? Yeah. Not just to adopt AI because it's the next big thing, but it is kind of overwhelming to take it all in. And so Roland, when, you know, I'm curious, do you have to explain? So you said that you go in and it's more of, hey, we've got this product, we've got this service. It's less about the technology. It's more about what that offer is. Cause I was going to ask, was it a hard sell, to describe the technology? Cause you guys have been around for a couple of years before kind of this ChatGPT and, you know, this influx of AI that I feel like has just really kind of come under, you know, the lens over just in the last, 6 months, but you guys have been around for a few years kind of selling in.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what's really helped us a lot is just being friggin' super straightforward and brutally honest with people. And what I mean by that is like, one of the things that's super interesting is about 75% of the folks that we talk to, if we end up on a call with them and demoing the product, some people just sign up directly on the website, which is super awesome too. Either way, we're great. About 75% are asking about artificial intelligence. But what I mean about being brutally honest is we started off the company very tech forward. Like if you looked at the website we had a year and a half ago, it was a lot of bullshit and gobbledygook. And you know, we kind of went to market that way and we're not doing well. We were not selling. And we were like, oh, wait, you know, maybe it's us. And once we said to ourselves, wait, we're dealing with a group of very smart, sophisticated business owners who are not marketing experts. So let's not be tech forward, let's be service forward. That's when everything changed. And so we find on conversations, we have a lot of questions about AI, and sometimes they have questions about the tech, but to be brutally honest, we'll be like, do you really give a shit about how the tech works? Or are you just like super stoked that it's working for you? And people are like, yeah, I'm just super stoked it's working for me. But it's great to have like a fun chat because people are curious.
Right.
At the end of the day, the value proposition is that it works, and it works effectively, and it works at a price point that's effective. And that's where AI has impacted our business, is it's got our cost of sales and our unit economics incredibly favorable for us, which means we can offer a product in market that's $79.
Right.
We're getting a social media manager, you know, is going to be $1,500 or $299 or $5, whatever it is. So that's what I think is super interesting.
Yeah. So biggest aha and oh shit moments for you so far?
Today?
Or... today, yeah.
Right. In the past 5 minutes?
And it, since in your journey, like what is, since you started AI, what was like your biggest, whoa, this is, was not expected. You had, like you said, you kind of spent this mindset being an entrepreneur, but yep, then actually coming and doing it on your own, you know, what was some of the biggest aha moments for you?
You know, the biggest aha moment for me was to have the realization that I had to unlearn a lot of the stuff that I normally talk about in business, right? I mean, it really ties in with this conversation we were having. So like unlearn the gobbledygook, unlearn the bullshit, and just be very straightforward and plain spoken around the product that we're building, right? Get out of enterprise corporate-y mindset and into, hey, what is this product and how does it work? So making that shift for me coming out of like building more enterprise products was, you know, a challenge, and it took me some time to do it. And I've never been happier, quite frankly. So that's the big aha there. And the oh shit moments have been a lot, right? I mean, yeah, we started the company and we really got going in like January of 2020. So what happened March 13th of 2020 was friggin', you know, everyone was like, oh, the airports are shut for a week because, you know, there's a virus in the world. So, you know, we went through that. And the other thing, to be brutally honest, that's been a big challenge is the people. You know, kind of dealing with a startup in the middle of COVID in a hyper growth market where, you know, I had a head of product where we were negotiating, they you know, wanted to be chief product officer, which I was open to, and we were negotiating, but the terms of the negotiation was that they were going to spend 25% of the time on personal growth and development. And I was like, no, no.
Yeah. You're in a startup. This isn't. Yeah.
Like you can spend 10%. I'm like, well, we'll do everything we can to help you build your personal brand and grow beyond the company and continue your path. But if you're going to be working here, like you friggin' do the work and let's get a product to work. So shit like that became really intense because there was, you know, a couple years there in COVID where it was just like this crazy hyper startup growth moment in the Bay Area, especially. And I'm kind of relieved to be past that.
Yeah. Well, as in like you guys were getting a lot of attention from a lot of the municipality, the economic development kind of service organizations, just a lot of heightened attention or.
It's just that there was so much money flowing into startups.
Okay.
VCs were so, had so much money to spend and there were so many new VCs that it was just this scramble and it got people's kind of expectations out of whack. Like you were just recruiting good, talented people and retaining them became very, very challenging.
Yeah. What, and you find it's, is that still a challenge today?
I think it's cooled off a bit, right? I mean, you know, you can pick up the newspaper and read the headlines. You know, it's, the economy's cooled off a bit. VCs have pulled back. I think the VC ecosystem got rocked pretty hard by Silicon Valley Bank.
Yeah.
You know, it's got kicked in the teeth in a couple ways. So we'll see how things play out. I mean, I still think the fundamentals of the economy are quite strong. I mean, the labor, you know, numbers just came out and labor markets remain strong. So I'm optimistic that it's actually going to be a like a fairly even year for the economy. So that's good, right? But what has gone out is sort of that hyper growth mentality. So investors are being more cautious about companies they invest in. Yep.
And are you, did you guys go the VC route?
We, so we did a pre-seed round and we raised from one small VC and a home office and then some angel investors.
Oh, good. Okay.
We're trying to figure out what we want to do next in terms of a seed round, or we might just go straight to Series A depending on how things go over the next, you know, 6 months. But, our eyes are open. I mean, VC, private equity, mid-cap IPO strategy, like we're kind of down for anything, man.
Because there's some people that are like, I don't want to go that route. I'm just going to go after a more traditional kind of lending, retain my ownership and, you know, and grow it and kind of control my runway. it sounds like you're more that you're going down the path of like that VC investor. Okay. We want that support for that impact growth. Or are you guys just still in that? We don't know yet.
I would say we're in the, we don't know yet. Okay. You know? Because we're open to it. I think, you know, VC funding is great because it does kind of give you that hyper growth lane, but there's challenges to it as well, and dilution and ownership. It's a very specific pathway and it's not for all businesses. I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. I had lunch with a VC firm in San Francisco last week, and I won't name the name, but they're a major player in the AI space. And we had a great conversation. You know, we're going to continue that conversation. But one of the points that she was making was VC funding is not for everyone. It's for a very specific kind of company that's hyper growth and loses money and blows up fast and IPO strategy and all that, blah, blah. So, you know, it's, man, I just have tremendous respect for people who build a business. And if you can go, you know, if you need growth, go after traditional funding sources, get a bank loan.
Right, right, right. I love this conversation. So, moving ahead on, other, your oh shit moments, what's been the biggest barrier besides team? I mean, team retention, finding that right talent. Has that been the only barrier? There's gotta be some other like your oh crap moments.
Yeah, for sure. So, when you're starting a business and especially a startup, one of the things that's incredibly important is your support network. So that's your wife, your husband, your kids, because mm-hmm. you're taking a huge risk, right? No matter what.
That's right.
You're taking a financial risk. You're taking an emotional risk. You're taking, you know, and I kind of think like you only have so many moves in life, right? Like as you get older, you're like, oh, I got a few less moves than I had 5 years ago. So, you know, the stakes get a little higher. You're like, oh, maybe this is my last company I'll start. Maybe this right. is my last, maybe, you know, whatever. But anyway, I think, you know, considering that support system and the feelings and managing them and being open and communicative with them, especially your, you know, significant other, is just absolutely critical because they are on this journey with you, whether they chose to or not.
That's right. That's right. But yeah. They kind of need to know what's in your head. I know a lot of founders go into therapy and couples therapy and
for sure.
Yeah. You have to do that. So what advice, like if you had to do something over again,
yeah.
Is there anything that you would do over, or you're just like, nope, I like how it's played out?
You know, I might have mitigated risk a little bit more, you know, raised a little more money, been a little bit more thoughtful about the risk profile of the business. But the main thing I really encourage everyone is just take care of yourself, stay healthy, your personal mm-hmm. health, your personal well-being is critical. You know, find that thing that you love, whether it be, I don't have my tennis racket here. I guess I left it in the other room. Like I play tennis a couple times a week and that's just a huge, you know, stress relief for me. And it's physical and it's like that. You know, I bought a juicer and I juice every morning. You know, I throw a couple oranges, lemons and ginger in there, whatever I can find out of the fridge. It's
get your cleanse.
Yeah, I just toss it in the juicer. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm particularly healthy, but it's like one healthy thing I do, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, that's my biggest advice is sleep well, eat well. It's a marathon, not a sprint. Take care of yourself, work a reasonable number of hours. And, that it's so critical to maintaining that perspective.
Yeah. And then on team, I want to go back on that. Cause I know that's a struggle with a lot of founders and small business owners and startups. How are you ensuring, I mean, you talked about get out of that enterprise kind of mindset and, yeah. you know, all about service and values and make sure that you guys, you know, don't use that media speak language. How yeah. do you control that? How do you, encourage and motivate and communicate with your team to get everybody on that same page? Are there any tools and techniques that you're using to bring your team along?
Yeah. It's a great question. So I think one is hiring from the beginning, you know, mm-hmm. kind of who you choose to hire is really important. And we've hired a lot of folks outside the Bay Area. I mean, I would say actually over 90% of the team is outside the Bay Area. I might be the only person in the Bay Area. who's on the team. Yeah. So we got folks in LA and Mexico City and Las Vegas and all over. And that's really great, right? With the remote world that we live in, you can hire from anywhere. So hire folks who, you know, represent that perspective already. So they're coming into the company, right? Like for us, I was like, oh, I'm not going to go hire someone out of the agency world or programmatic world or corporate tech world, right? I didn't try and recruit from Facebook or Instagram, right? We went to folks we recruited out of the small business community or people who started businesses. So make a clear choice about who you recruit. And then the second one is just lead by example. Like if you talk that way, everyone's going to talk that way. If you wear board shorts and flip-flops to meetings, everyone will wear board shorts and flip-flops. Right? So, you know, you kind of have to set the tone.
Very good. All right. Well, Roland, this was fantastic. I love talking to you. We're live today, but then we will download this. This will be uploaded to all of our podcast platforms over. We'll schedule that for the weekend and distribute that through Orange Whip and all of our products. But for people that want to listen and watch for it, you can go to Hello Chaos Podcast. Again, available on all podcast platforms. Check this out or go to orangewhip.com, orangewhip.com, and follow along, subscribe to our content. But we loved having Roland and the CEO and founder of Arrow AI, and check him out. And Roland, how can people find more information about Arrow?
Yeah, for sure. So www.getarrow.ai, it's the best place, or link to any of our social media channels. Or if you want to look me up, I'm on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, GitHub, just about everywhere else. Roland Reichel, Roland Reichel is my name. And amazing to be here, Jennifer. I love what you're doing for the startup community. I mean, having a podcast like this and where people can kind of listen in and get information is great. So I am incredibly humbled and really appreciate the opportunity to be here today.
Well, I appreciate it, Roland. Let's good things to come for both of us.
Good.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We're back. Oh,